Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special event today with visionary astrologer, activist, and all-around magic maker. Her name is Caroline Casey, and the timing for today's program could not be better with an eclipse on the horizon and a really epical eclipse for America. The subject today is really about making the gods work for you. How does the practice of astrology translate into concrete ways that we can shift our lives and align with the deeper wisdom of the universe that wants to unfold? And we're going to do so with a lot of fun as well, because Caroline is a great mischief maker and great wordsmith and really helps us see the art of play and how important that is to create positive change personally and collectively. So, without further ado, welcome Caroline to today's program.
Thank you so much. And with all of the high-tech props available to us, we go high-tech because we remember Ursula Le Guin says, what does she say? She says, those who do not listen to dragons are doomed to live out the nightmares of politicians.
What a great way to start. That makes me laugh so hard.
May we all be dragons, and may we feed the dragon within us. And yeah, the book, Making the Gods Work for You, and our wonderful course, Unfurling, it's a quippy title, right? It's like making the gods work for you as long as we work for them. You know, the gods are willing to do 50%, but not 51%.
Right. It's mutual exchange is required here. So, well, I want to say right up front, we're going to have this hour with Caroline. And the course she mentioned is we're very excited about. It's called Visionary Activist Astrology. We'll talk a bit more about that towards the end today. It's like, woohoo. Well, this is a program we've been waiting for a while from Caroline, and we're really excited to bring it to you. But let's first, Caroline, I think because the eclipse is building really in the collective consciousness today, we're just 2 days away. I think if we start a little context about why this might be a significant moment for our country, and then that's a great segue into the deeper lessons for astrology in terms of helping us live better lives.
And it's also, you know, we're in this riptide of ancient meeting modern and everything, and liberty meeting tyranny and all of that swoosh. So in antiquity, you know, the priesthood, jealous of their position, you know, was informing the populace like eclipses are bad. Whoa, don't do that. We go, no, although there's a lot of intriguing things to track. Remember that astrology is at least threefold: descriptive, guiding, and celebratory. But this eclipse, which has a good imprint for 6 months, is so we're all around it now. Whoa. You know, what wants to happen, we'll dive into this, you know, ever more deeply. But, you know, it's an eclipse. Eclipses always move from west to east, you know, kind of like the Bob Dylan song, you know, wisdom comes from west to east, I shall be released. And so this eclipse, you know, starting in the Pacific Northwest, goes through every town named Lincoln, right? And goes through Lincoln's birthplace and then exits America at Fort Sumter, right? Wow. So a wonderful friend of mine who was giving a historic lecture on this, you know, a couple months ago said, so this eclipse has a lot to do with race and the Civil War and Lincoln and democracy and Fort Sumter, you know, Civil War tyranny. So we go, all right, it's right along the eclipse path, right? Which is intriguing. And then for us, how do we want to cooperate with it? And for those, I'm a big eclipsophile, but just a little preview, you know, right now the Sun and Mars are together, which is called Mars in the Underworld. In Leo, when a planet is so close to the sun, we can't see it. It's called in the underworld. And this reminds us of all the important myths that King Arthur, positive yang guy, you know, did not die. He goes to Avalon to take Pilates classes with the priestesses, you know, until until a time of dire danger, you know, when the world calls him back. And we go, now would be really good. And it's also Haijan, the conqueror, the trickster redeemer of the South, very important folk hero who liberates everybody and is even willing to liberate the tyrant. It's also said of him, he did not die. He goes to go live in Haijan the Conqueror route to await the world's call at a time of danger. And we go, now would be really good. There's a Brazilian word, jatinho, which means the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times. And we go, that's great. So at the actual moment of totality, you know, we will see Mars. We will see the planets. We'll see Mars, Venus, and maybe Mercury. It's like, so we see what we don't normally see. We're seeing into the underworld. And Mars is getting ready to return. So our primary dynamic now and for a good long time is, what do we want to be eclipsed by what? So yeah, the downfall of tyrants, you know, and the eclipses on, you know, Scrotus. I call him Scrotus. I can't help it. So-called ruler of the United States. I prefer that. It's on his ascendant, you know, and we go, okay, but these, but so into the eclipse goes tyranny. We want to ladle out wise, positive yang to dance with the beautiful feminine. And
that's real. I've been getting the same thing, that this is about a great healing of the masculine and feminine, because, and Trump is an interesting character to play in the sense he was born on a lunar eclipse where the sun, the masculine principle, eclipsed the moon, and now there's the reversal of that, which is brings the rebalancing potentially. And so I think there's some potentially very interesting dynamics that are going to happen for our country.
And the sun didn't exactly, it was a precise full moon when he was born, which is sun, earth, moon. So the sun projects the earth's shadow onto the moon, right? So yeah, and now we have the moon covering up the too bright light of the sun. And for the first time, oh, it's a long time. You know, we haven't had an eclipse cross America in 99 years. We've had eclipses I saw in 1970 on the East Coast, you know, but we haven't had an eclipse exactly conjoining the fixed star Regulus, which is the king, the heart of the lion. So we, for those of us who feel disheartened, dis means underworld, you know, this is about heartening and the return of what's been exiled. And then also just as a little, you know, this eclipse crosses from Pacific Northwest, you know, exits at Fort Sumter. You know, there will be another one April 8th, 2024, which does crosses the other way, right? So we're going to get crisscrossed. America's going to get crisscrossed. And the point of convergence is Illinois-ish, you know, Lincoln-ish, you know, but so.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, that's a whole another level of things. Well, let's go into the deeper principles. So, you know, for folks who are not as much astrologers, like, why is the languaging and the archetypes of astrology so important for us to make meaning of reality?
Well, I don't think we need astrology in a way, but it is a wonderful, exquisite language of our souls, the inner democracy of ourself. And its connection to the whole large pulsing collective. And I've loved it since 1970 as a little teen, and you know, and studied things to inform it, you know. But it is this exquisite language. It is interesting that it's become, you know, the gold standard of contempt in, you know, scientific muggle circles. You don't really, but you know. I even get that from my family. Oh, you don't really, you know. But it is this exquisite language, and why I'm so enthused about it and sharing it with everyone. It's like a friend of mine was asked, what's your definition of maturity? And he said, to have access to all of one's resources. And I like that. I think that's a pretty good start. And this beautiful language of astrology really does make all of our customized resources available to us. When we speak about the planets, when we speak to the planets, that which they represent inside us quickens, like, hello, hello, you know, regardless of whether we know the language or not. And so, especially now, these principles of astrology that we want to humbly as humans derive navigational principles from nature. So when conflicting forces come together, nature creates a spiral, right? Which is sacred to Venus. It's a complex, interesting geometry. It comes out of the number five, but spirals. And so as we see this hot polarity everywhere, I have relatives who live in Charlottesville, and I mean, all of that, you know, and it's hot. We want to be agents of cool in a hot world where, you know, the uninitiated Mars is playing conflagration poker, right? So here's us. And the idea of insourcing everything that we might have been outsourcing personally and collectively, you know, and it's whenever you be the guide, you know, but whenever, you know, each planet represents a living quality of intelligence that resides within each one of us and connects us to the world. And there are ways to honor it, feed it, speak about it, stories, all of that, and what happens when we don't. So, you know, Saturn is authority, contains the word author. It's and so we want to insource our authority. Even right now, everybody, just inhaling from wherever we've outsourced authority to incompetent sociopathic dingbats, come on back into our hara, right below our navel, our balance point, our cool point, so that we can enter hot reactive situations as agents of cool response. And that's a self-possessed Saturn. And we'll dispel, the superstitions and everything, because often people go, oh, Saturn, oh. And I love an astro colleague of mine says, oh, Saturn transits, uh-oh, might get something done. Whoa, no. So, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Part of what I'm hearing in the way you're talking about astrology is like each planet in a way represents an aspect of ourselves. And when we can, when we dance with it and think about it and dialogue with it, with the movements and the relationship, we're actually becoming more aware of these different aspects of ourselves and how they interplay.
Well, I like thinking that everything real, everything symbolic. An astrological chart is just a factual stylized map. And the way I always do readings is to go real map, symbolic map, as everything is real and symbolically speaking to us. And it's a map of our inner democracy. We like everybody, and its connection to the world. And everybody's got a different, unique contribution that we all want. I mean, my fervent enthusiasm is let's reciprocal blessing. Let's get us all up to speed so that we're really animatedly, in conversation and in possession of our resources. The power of dedication and vows and autonomy. And especially now, where it's such a riptide, and we have an eclipse, which is also kind of joins with Pluto going an eclipse cauldron. What do we want to throw into the eclipse cauldron, and what do we want to ladle out? And so everything really, all spiritual teachings and everything is eager to jump into the cauldron with the criterion, does it guide people to their own autonomy? Can the truth be said without cringing or supplicating? Is trickster welcome? Is it equal Mars and Venus, men and women? Is it equal in our considering our species and the rest of our kin on this planet? Yes, we ladle it out. No, we throw it back in for another round of bubbling, So that idea of ironically, astrology really in its deepest form is to guide all of us to our own autonomy. We're not outsourcing. We're not believing somebody else, we're guided to our own, which is crucial. So yeah, so if it's also a good positive subversive thing, because when we talk to others, whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, which is why we want to discern and diagnose, but not judge, right? Because when we're judging, we're inviting the least evolved part of that person to dance with the least evolved part of us. And it's a conflagration. It's never, the dragon agrees. So everybody's got a hero, a heroine, a Mercury, a Hermes, a communicator, a messenger, a dreamer, a trickster, a sober, serious person, a leader, all of those things are there in different qualities, and everybody's in a unique way, but we can speak to that in ourselves and then in others. And it quickens it, we saw each other in Cleveland, right? We ran into each other synchronously at the Republican convention. I like crossing borders.
The night that Trump was inaugurated, that we definitely were behind an enemy, is would be the wrong term, but definitely felt like a spy.
Right, but that's also when I knew. I knew, and it ties us into what we're doing here. I went back, to my little motel room, and I actually went to my knees under the starry heavens, and I was like, oh man, we are so smoked. We're smoked on our strong suit, the strong suit of good-hearted people, which is story crafting, because he's the con, Scrotus is the con, but he had the story thing, multi-level marketing. I will bring to you the deepest desire you've always wanted since you were born, he said at that convention. I'm like, oh no. And Hillary, God love her, but she had no story craft, you know, inviting to what? Inviting to what? So to all of us, you know, as we animate Jupiter, which is the principle of curiosity and reverent inquiry, journeys and blessing and story craft, I'm so dedicated to encouraging, feeding the heart, you know, of all of us, self and others, in our story craft, especially now. The stories we tell ourselves, you know, have everything to do with what is or isn't possible. And then the stories we put out into the world, you know, have everything to do with what is or isn't possible. And now is such a huge opportunity for all of us, you know, as the swindle and the violence and the thing, the con, becomes increasingly clear. You know, people are wanting an invitational story, you know, come on over here. This is the Renaissance. Everyone's welcome. We will, you know, we want to invite the best of everyone. See, the con and the violence we've been seeing is inviting the worst. So it behooves us to be gifted story crafting artists at inviting the best out of ourselves, you know, and also in world.
Well, I love your perspective, and bringing it back to some of the astrological principles that I think are really important. It's like one of the things I'm hearing is that you know, if we relate to astrology as principles for opening ourselves to a fuller palette or an open, it's more of a liberating different aspects rather than sometimes astrology is held in a fairly deterministic way. It's like, okay, well, we are just defined in smaller boxes versus like expanded into a larger palette. I think that seemed one of the key things I take away from your viewpoint.
No, it's important, I think, for all of us. You know, categories can be beacons of light or prisons, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're a Scorpio. Oh, yeah. And right, blessed Scorpios. And but no, absolutely. And you bring up a really crucial theme. All cultures have their philosophies and all cultures have their astrology, you know, and it's changing with time, this access to this intrinsic, beautiful language about the interrelatedness of everything. So if one were born into a highly structured, you know, caste system culture, one's life would be highly predictable. So Vedic astrology has much great beauty, much great fantasticness. I have great respect for it, but how it can often be, imprisoning, you know, in its how it can be abused, is in this highly predictable, you know. Now some of it can be witty, right? You will die when you're 84 by slipping on a bar of soap, you know. It's like, well, it certainly takes the fear out of plane travel, you know, but I don't think it's true. You know, and I know great Vedic astrologers who use it in a liberating fashion. So everything can be used in a tyrannical con way or liberating way. And this beautiful language is really meant to be liberating, to guide people to their own autonomy, which is why many useful teachings from predictable cultures, you know, but now we want democracy inside in order to have democracy outside. Now, it's and how we worship, you know, however that is. And that's why part of the thing I carry in my magic backpack is a wonderful ally disguised as a psychologist. And she was saying, you know, she lives in Crete and is a great student of archaeology and many great things and goddess culture. And she said, the modern concept of worship in a kind of mainstreamish way, she said, is so silly. You are great. I am nothing now. You know, give me this thing. And she said, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout the Mediterranean, there was enormous reverence and respect between the invisible backstage spiritual and the onstage incarnational manifest sensual. But she said, but it was a much more collaborative relationship. Here we are, making the gods work for you if we work for them. She said that the invisible divine seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. So I love this. I keep it with me always. As long as we have a kind of hierarchical mythos about the divine, even, we're getting into some heresy here, you know, we're going to end up with Scrotus, right? So this idea of democratic animism, you know, of a willing collaboration, and that will get us also to Venus, that Venus is the part of us that magnetizes and invites in the invisible through dedicated acts of beauty. Come on in, this is what we need. Or out of the eclipse dynamic, come on back, King Arthur, come on back, positive, heartful Yang, in everyone's heart, regardless of, you know, temporary age, race, and gender assignment. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk a little bit about Uranus. I know you as one of the key archetypes for our time, and obviously an archetype that you are very alive in and with. And so why is the relationship with Uranus collectively so important, and how do we activate more of that in our own lives?
Right. Well, it's very cool in the micro and the macro and the everything. So even the glyph for Uranus, you know, it's a little H with a circle drop below it. So it looks like an archaic jail key, right? So it's like, unlock yourself and pass it on. It's the beautiful Hafez phrase, you know, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. So Uranus is it represents the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, large by energetic symbolism, even if not mass in Pluto's case, they represent huge forces of nature's evolutionary intelligence. And they're the keepers of the whole big collective frame story that we're all a part of. So Uranus, to me, represents nature's evolutionary ingenuity of experimental genius. You know, it's, again, try this. It's the part of nature and of us that comes alive when things are dangerous and that actually likes it. You know, it's the seed that sprouts after cataclysm. It's the trickster redeemer God. It's the part of us that loves against all odds. I mean, other parts of us are like, whoa, whaley, whaley, whaley. But Uranus is like, against all odds. Yeah. You know, a trickster redeemer says, find a way out of no way. Hit a straight lick with a crooked stick. Boom. You know, so, you know, we can see it in all the things I love, you know, and you know, coyote and raven and ingenuity and resilient plants and unexpectedness and, you know, all those liberating things. You know, liberating is such a great gerund, such a great word to even put in front of our names, right? Because it means we're setting it free and a quality intrinsic to it. You know, liberating Stephen Dynan, liberating Caroline Casey, liberating fill in your name, everybody. You know, and it also has no category about success fail, right? Nature's evolutionary genius is not, will humans laugh if I put big ears on this mammal? It's like, no, let's just try it and see if the little critter lasts for a couple million years. So it's a part of us that is like, try that. Nope. Try that. Nope. Try that. Ooh, yeah. So we love it. And it's very, even more, you know, everything's trying to help us out. You know, it's as though the backstage gods are like, humans, God, we're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's pitch them some softballs. Let's make things really simple. You know, the guy who looks like the devil on TV. Come on, humans. Come on. We're making it really simple for you. You know, it's like, you know, what else are we going to do? But so at this eclipse, I'll say it and translate it. You know, the sun and moon will be at 28 plus Leo. Uranus will be at 28 plus Aries, an exact 120 degree angle, really fabulous. And where I'll be, in Oregon, Uranus will be right exactly on the western horizon. So a trine is like greased lightning. You know, all kinds of things can happen. There's descriptions. It's like, whoa, whoa. But for those of us wanting to align and cooperate, we go, where would we like liberation? Where would we like genius? Where would we like a powerful creative renaissance in our own hearts and to contribute to the world? Because part of, you know, the way what I love and love to proffer is whatever each one of us does for ourselves grants us the spiritual muscle tone, you know, to participate in doing that in the world, right? So for the, you know, we want to be liberating. We want to be liberated and liberating. And we want to invite in, you know, that resilient genius. We have ingenious solutions to almost all the, you know, horrific rudenesses we as a species have imposed. What we then need with Uranus is Saturn, dedication, disciplined wildness, and this eclipse is forming what's called a grand trine in fire. The eclipse itself trines Uranus, and Uranus trines Saturn. Again, form, structure, authority, really good, and Saturn trines back to the eclipse. Saturn is retrograde now, meaning for all of us, you know, now, you know, we want to cavort in perpetuity, but even just right now, it's on a journey backwards for all of us to remember everything we've ever studied that was ever of use, you know, every chapter of our lives, because it wants to be retrieved, liberated, and brought alive in a creative fashion. And that's part of the kind of woof woof of this eclipse, you know, bowing down before us like a beguiling coyote going, woof, woof, yip, yip, want to play? And we go, we do. We do want to play. Yeah.
Yeah. I just love your perspective. I mean, you were born for this time, too, to help us understand these deeper dynamics. One of the things in describing today's call, we talked about becoming a better conscious player on the team of creation. So how can astrology help us become a better team player in a way to help evolve things?
Well, it is all collaborative. And again, just to tease all the implications. And again, I love to, you know, cahoot and counsel and teach people who know nothing about astrology and people who know a lot and love it and people who are professionals, because it all comes back to kind of working principles, you know. So, and that digression, yes, ask me the question again, Stephen, and I threw that ball up
becoming a better team of
yes,
creation
thank you,
player.
Thank you very much. Right. So we love democracy, right? So to react to anything, or you know, that odious metaphor I want to throw into the cauldron, you know, pushes my buttons, you know, I want to throw that metaphor, it's tired, into the cauldron, but whatever gets our goat, you know, wherever we are reactive is where we are not free, right? So we want to throw conditioning and reactivity, you know, into the cauldron and ladle out, you know, our own autonomy, but our willingness to expand our repertoire of responses, because when we expand our repertoire of responses, which is the antidote to reaction, then we are allied with nature's evolutionary genius, which is why with Mercury, we go to expand vocabulary is to expand possibility and intimacy with the world. You know, and that's why also I love, you know, when we brew all these guys together, Uranus says there's no prison for the unexpected. You know, and I've test driven this in Cleveland and gone to CPAC right-wing conferences, and I go to the underworld on everyone's behalf because there are allies everywhere, you know, and we want to do that. So no prison for the unexpected. When we use expected language, people are like, oh, but unexpected language, you know, I've said this before, but we might have new humans on our call. Hello. You know, when I went to CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference, it's the festival of demons, really. And everybody, all the Dementors of Doom are there, you know. And so there was, you know, a guy with an eye patch, you know, and followed by, you know, all these right-wing Ayn Rand Austrian economists. And I was like, whew. But a crucial part of our dynamic is to pull out our metaphoric toolkit, our harumphitude composter, nama, 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 nama. So that we're throwing judgment away, because communication only effective once we've done that, you know. And so they approached me going, you, who are you? Because, you know, I look like how I look, right? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they were like, that is so cool. You know, let's buy you a beer. See, if I said I'm a feminist, environmentalist, astrologer, you know, anyway, so fresh language and fresh metaphors and keeping it reinventing, so that all of us in our personal lives and collective can assume narrative lead. So we're not just reacting like, oh, how horrible. Oh, how horrible. We go, how horrible? And let's go here. You know, we want to throw anger into the cauldron and ladle out desire, right? You know, it's like, what does it want to be? So everything is a Jupiter journey. We start with resistance, right? But we don't want to stay with that word because it's a losing move in Aikido. So we start with anger, good, turn it into desire. What do we want? We start with resistance, good, and then turn it into, well, we're going to play with lots of people for the next better word. You know, at large gatherings, you know, when people, you know, which I often participate in, when people say, you know, on the stage, we want you to support these people's long struggle, their long fight, which is a very hot word. And I go, I want to support their effective dedication. right? I mean, let's use the magic now. Like, they've won. They're doing it. You know, good. Fight is we strengthen whatever we resist, kind of thing. So with Uranus, again, liberating our language, our metaphors, you know, liberating ourselves from our sad stories. And also what we can do with this beautiful language is we can actually really find a fairly detailed description of our ancestors and what we get from our father and what we get from our mother as work done and work not done handed down to us. You know, and it comes as a kind of script, you know, but at a certain time when there's so much brewing, like right now, if we don't like the script, we can throw it into the cauldron for another, you know, and in that sense also liberate the ancestors. So we're willing to liberate. And that's another linguistic astrological theme, you know, which is expectation is the partner of disappointment. Oh, I knew it wouldn't be that good. Oh, fooey, you know. But willingness is the dance partner of life. And Uranus, the trickster within all of us, says, I'm going to connect each one of you, us, to the coolest thing possible. Where would you like genius? Where do you want to dance with the muse? You know, and all I want from you, you know, in exchange to set the whole deal going is willingness. And we go, sure, what the hell? You know, we don't even have to believe in it, you know, but even just right now we go, sure, what the hell? Whatever the coolest thing possible, inwardly and outwardly, we're willing, you know. And the backstage gods go, look at all those people, you know, they've hoisted their sails of willingness. Let's go. Right. So, you know, a small verbal distinction, but a huge energy difference. When we're expecting and disappointed, we're carrying around a portable prison for ourselves and others. When we're willing, double entendre, like intending and available, then we are agents of liberating.
Fantastic. Well, one of the things we talked about in describing today is that you're going to share some of the key principles of visionary activist astrology. So that this toolkit you developed to take the astrological understanding and turn it into an enhanced ability to stir up the cauldron of change.
Right. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun getting older and being able to quote myself going, by God, I've done a lot of work. So the visionary activist principles, it is also tongue in cheek as everything meant to be liberating, because the first principle is believe nothing, entertain possibilities. But see, it's also don't believe that either, right? Just entertain that possibility. When we believe, you know, we can to and fro on a lot of things, because belief also has a beautiful etymology, but believe nothing, entertain possibilities, meaning often when we believe someone, you know, we are outsourcing our authority, you know, and even if it happened to be the truth, it would still be a booby prize because we've outsourced our autonomy. We go, let me see if that's true. Let me, you know, research. And, you know, and oh, it is, you know. You know, the wonderful saying, you know, knowledge is like a brass jewelry. Only when it's been kind of worked and beaten can it be worn as an adornment, right? We want to, all of us, work the thing. You know, it's part of our dynamic, especially now, all of us curious and eager to participate in a personal renaissance and a collective renaissance. We cast our net of curiosity widely. We inhale the catch, we edit, right? You know, quality control. I like this from here, but not that thing. And I like this from here, but not the old fuddy patriarchal thing. You know, and then we collage things and spiral them out again. So coyote trickster in all of us is willing to, you know, out of the cauldron, ladle spirals and waft them into the collective mind, into the memosphere. And it's said that the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. Oh, let's do that. Then the next principle is imagination lays the tracks for the reality train. We go, yeah, you know, it's a Neptune-Saturn thing, you know. Imagination lays the tracks, right? And the reality train follows that. So the tragedy of limited human circumstance is not even so much the literal poverty as the imprisoning of imagination that ensues. So all of us, we want to be liberating imagination, because that's reality follows along that. I can keep going here. One that's pertinent to us really right now: better to create prophecy than live prediction, right? So, because prediction comes from the word predicament, same word predicament, almost always negative. And especially now, you know, listen to all whatever, certainty is a booby prize, right? We want to throw certainty into the cauldron because that's completely ridiculous. And ladle out wonder. Because whatever we wonder about is going to attract in this call and response. You know, I wonder what to do now. Whoa, okay. You know, and see, in antiquity, you know, as we decondition from some of the toxicity of the modern world, in antiquity, because modern world, everybody's supposed to have health insurance. Well, that should be a good idea. But also a snappy 5-year plan and a sense of identity and all kinds of things. And certainty. This is how it is. It's changing, right? Because we're all, you know, what are we doing in this handbasket? You know, but in antiquity, not knowing, you know, wondering was considered a very advanced accomplishment. You know, look, Stephen or Caroline or fill in your name has run out of certainty. Now the divine can find them, right? So to create prophecy is part of our story craft, which is to be fully informed about how dangerous things are now. And how dangerous to so much life. We got to know, but then to ladle out in collaborating with nature's genius in a humble fashion, you know, what do we desire and what is the desirable prophecy? You know, step this way, come this way. We need everybody. And the initiation of Mars, when we speak about uninitiated Mars, you know, we're the first, you know, several generations of humans who have not done a proper initiation of Mars. I mean, there's men's movement and things like that, but which are coming back, which is good. But the initiation of Mars was, you know, it's really simple in a way. It was to returning veterans, Mars, to young men and women. We need you. We need you to help build Stonehenge. We need you to participate in this renaissance, you know, as opposed to get lost at the mall, you know, and also to see, to do that effectively. You know, people are often saying, will you be our elder? I'm like, too frumpy a word. I'll be Maven. You know, may we all be Mavens, which is an information resource, you know. And to do that, you got to have enthusiasm for what you're doing. That's part of the initiation. We love our work. We love our work. Come, join us, that you may find work that you love, right? Yeah. But if you're alienated and depressed, going, we hate our job, you just obey, you just whatever. No. More fun to join a gang, or I mean, not really, but it's the same thing, and that's also part of our diagnostic skills. When we put a hyphen in diagnosis, we have dia hyphen gnosis. Dia means everywhere, and gnosis is wisdom. So all diagnoses are good. It's also the cunning use of hyphens, because I also. I love to throw the word impact into the cauldron because it's everywhere. People are like, we're going to fight to have an impact and really a short-term violent encounter like an asteroid. How about a long, curvy influence? And a friend of mine said, well, just put a hyphen in impact and then you have imp-act. I'm going, I'm on it.
You're on board now.
I'm all up for the impact, right? Yeah, so then liberate the tricksters. So, yes, and do you want me to keep going with the principles?
Sure.
Okay, sure. All right. Next one is, the invisible world would like to help, but spiritual etiquette requires that we ask, right? Help is always available. Cooperators are standing by, right? So that's also part of, you know, a lot of self-made people, God love all of us, but we might have vowed long ago, you know, we vowed to not need help, you know, or that as though receiving help would in any way taint our autonomy. And the backstage gods are like, oh, humans, you know, because it kind of precludes intimacy, because then we're the person giving but not receiving. And so that idea that right now things in our own personal lives and collective lives are kind of intended to be so intense that we go, oh, help. And the backstage gods, divine, woof woof, that animates the universe, however we want to refer to these mysteries, you know, says, thank goodness these humans and on this call, finally ask for help, because we would love to help, but we must be invited, right? So, and principle number four is the only way the gods know we're asking for help is ritual. And, you know, there's a lot around the eclipse, there's a lot around everything. And ritual as the earliest form of theater, if we just cook it to what it really is intrinsically, it's any physical action that we imbue with symbolic dedication. So we can sweep the floor, or we can sweep out the past when we're sweeping out the floor. So it's not necessarily an outsourced thing that somebody tells you to stand on your left foot and hop around six times under the moon, unless that amused you. You know, it's, again, anything. And we can do group rituals as well, but it's good, again, a collaborative kind of dynamic, so that it's meaningful and liberating as opposed to superstitious and imprisoning, right? So, and then here's a fun, spicy one that takes, you know, it takes a shift course and to play this one out. If something's a problem, make it bigger. So we go, well, what is that? You know, it's like, well, make it bigger. And there's a lot of provisos in this thing. You know, very often what gets toxic is due to its suppression and exclusion. You know, in astrology, Neptune, Pisces, 12th house, is everything that mainstream culture has forgotten, exiled, undervalued, suppressed, but said to be where a person or a culture's soul, its redemptive vision, lives. So it says to all of us, oh, humans, don't be distracted by obvious, visible, you know, orthodoxy necessarily. Look at what's missing, what has been undervalued, but is of great value. That's where the action is. Now, volatility, things are explosive and volatile in direct proportion to the degree of their exclusion, right? We push down and go boom. So that idea, you know, that we draw from many traditions, like in Tibetan exorcism, you know, God love the playful Tibetan exorcist. They imagine, you know, demons on the other side of a door, like, and they imagine a beam coming from their third eye, lasering the lock off. They go, come on out, demons. Come on out, demons. No one's as ugly as Yamantaka, Lord of Death. Come on out. And they come out and they're kind of foolish, you know, and there's a dance that ensues. You know, again, so with the hot volatility and opposition of, you know, alt-right, or as we call it, alt-reich, right? We love tricksters in the street. And, you know, in South Carolina at one point, there was a, you know, Confederate flag right-wing thing, you know, and they were like, white power. And the people on the side were going, tight shower? No, white power. White flower? No. What? Any disruption of the narrative, as opposed to opposing it, you know, it kind of liberates everybody. Uh-huh. You know, it's what I was doing with Vermin Supreme in Cincinnati, right? Disrupt orthodoxy and tyranny, you know, because that's when fear happens and that's when you get conflagration. And he was great at a moment of great tension and face-off between the cops. He got all the good-hearted team to yell, to chant, give the cops a raise, give the cops a raise, leaving the cops going, wait a minute, we're in another story. Oh, okay. And when there was the Westboro Baptist Church going, you're all pedophiles and sinners and sodomites and drug addicts and whatever, and Vermin Supreme said, those are my voters, right? And it cracked the cops up, and the cops, you know, laughter, unexpected things. You know, we want to animate our toolkit now for personal conundrum in our own families and neighborhoods. You know, it's all completely micro to macro personal.
Well, one other area that we said we'd talk about, I could just listen to you forever. One other area we said we talk about in relationship to astrology has to do with synchronicity and how using this language and connecting with these archetypes and energies actually can put us more in a field of interconnected wows that happen. So maybe share a little bit more about why that is and how we can increase that, the rate of synchronicity in our life.
Right. And I think it's a great mystery. Does synchronicity increase, or is it always there and we become more or less available to it? And we go, well, never mind that. You know, it might be a distinction without a difference, but yes, we do love call and response, you know, from the world. Because we know, you know, when we can sometimes feel like, you know, alone, pathetic weenies in the face of a vast, uncaring universe. It's like, hello, hello, nothing, you know. But we love it when we go, hello, and something goes, hello, right? Where we open the book to the right passage. And I do feel strongly that this can be cultivated. And back to Uranus. Uranus, you know, is creativity and ingenuity and liberating and all of those things. And the last ideas associated with it are equality, democracy, synchronicity. And I go, and I remember years ago going, I wonder what do those ideas have to do with each other? And no sooner did I wonder that, and for everybody, when we wonder, like wondering, we're turning our body into a beseeching chalice of magnetizing inquiry, going, we're wondering, right? Which does attract things. But so no sooner did I wonder, what are those ideas, democracy, equality, synchronicity, have to do with each other, then events stage themselves in a very fabulously clear way that said, you know, equality and synchronicity are very kinned. You know, when we deal with people straight across, meaning we have different roles on stage and backstage, and we're all different people, but with a fundamental respect, a great word, respect, it means to look again, the rate of synchronicity increases. When we look down at somebody or even up at somebody, no synchronicity. And it was a very particular, but again, don't believe this, all right, you know, but experiment with it. And it's a really heartening thing to play with, because it means the dementors of doom, you know, more money, more lawyers, maybe, you know, lumbering towards planetary extinction, carrying the net of creation with it, you know, but no magic, no synchronicity. But if we treat each other with ally etiquette, which does not mean being nice, because nice comes from the word nescient, which means ignorant, but it does mean spicy, playful, you know, not infantilizing other people by thinking they couldn't handle the truth. It's like, no, let's get into a truthful, respectful dynamic, dangerous in a good way. Synchronicity really picks up, you know, and so this is good news for the transformation of culture.
Wow. Well, you are a wonder of just insights and mythology, and just the dance of concepts and language is just it's a wonder to even be in the space with you. I want to spend some time now talking about your upcoming program explicitly. It's called the Visionary Activist Astrology Program, and actually not program, just Visionary Activist Astrology, cultivating the language of astrology to access your unique gifts and increase serendipitous synchronicity, as we were talking about. So really, it's like astrology as a tool for personal transformation and for being of greater service and also play in the world. So you can find all the details at visionaryastrologycourse.com, visionaryastrologycourse.com. So this is a brand new program with Shift. Super excited about it. 7 weeks. And Caroline has been chomping at the bit to offer this for the last couple of years as we've begun programs with her, because it really offers a guiding framework for how you can turn astrology, instead of the marginalized thing that's like everybody judges, oh, it's not astrology, into this like tool of wonder, like that really opens your life, opens up new possibilities of thinking and engaging people, and this kind of trickster energy really helps to free us from a lot of what I find this is just listening to Caroline is medicine for our heavy, dark, totalitarian, threatening times. It's like, oh, there's this whole new opening that happens. And it's partially through the lens of this way to dance with archetypes and with the synchronicities of life. So you can, again, find it at visionaryastrologycourse.com. And Caroline, I'd love for you to share in your own words what you're most excited about for this to bring to folks with this program, and take us on a tour of what the modules are going to be.
Excellent. And then just to segue, because I left two visionary activist principles out, I'll be swift. You know, we only possess the power of an insight when we give it expression. And that's also part of how I love working with people, you know, and as you say, I've done a number of courses with Shift and so on, which are all astrologically framed, you know, and guiding that way, which I love. But this is the first kind of tight 7 week full on astrology going, here's the language, here's the vocabulary, here's how we're going to apply it. So we only possess the power of an insight when we give it expression. There's a huge difference between fascinating insight about my father, which doesn't necessarily do anything, and making an altar, writing a poem, doing something, then you have the power of it. You know, and this is also part of guiding through the councils of seven planets, you know, 7 weeks, and Uranus, Neptune, Pluto woven throughout them. But, you know, we'll start with Saturn. But, you know, and part of that, you know, is again, like in antiquity, when people went to the Asclepions, the ancient cultural centers of intentional dreaming, healing and theater, they would come into balance, focus Saturn, and they would intend Saturn to have a dream, Neptune. And they made a deal with the gods, right? Send me a healing dream, you know, and I will give it expression, right? That was the deal. So everyone would have an amazing dream, and then they would write a poem, sing a song, draw something in the dirt with their toe, something to ground it. And having done that, they'd have the power, you know, of their vision, and they'd go back to their communities as seed Renaissance people. So that all really happened. So, you know, we're invoking that kind of dynamic. And the last principle is creativity comes from the wedding of paradoxes. We aspire to be disciplined, wild people who are radical traditionalists and more fun like that. I like starting with Saturn. That's our first council, right? I've managed to get the Shift Network to replace the word module, which seems like a cabinet, with council. And we're going to do a little more play. And we are, you know, for 14 people who are willing to be visible, you know, who sort of sign up, who would like their charts used as a demonstration for every council, you know, we'll have two charts and kind of pay attention for 15 minutes or so, but in which we really apply that working principle. So we start with Saturn, you know, which is a good place to start because Saturn defines, like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Structure, authority, power of vows, power of limits, power of leadership, you know, and we get to feel, how do we feed it, you know, with colors and songs? What happens when we don't? Well, just look at the world out there where we've outsourced authority to incompetent people. And, you know, and it's also, you know, part of our to and fro, you know, with tyranny, you know, how do we address tyranny? And I love the saying, tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love each other. And we say, tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love the earth. So all of these parts of the vocabulary, Saturn called the ruler of Capricorn and Aquarius, but we're going to play with the language and keep liberating it. You know, to be a Capricorn or an Aquarius really means not so much ruled by Saturn, an incarnation of Saturn, right? Mm. So to be a Libra or Taurus is not so much ruled by Venus as incarnation of Venus, you know, its agent. And then there's many, many parts of us, you know, so we start with Saturn. You have the list, oh, Skookum, organized person.
Oh, but Saturn, and then we go into Jupiter.
Oh, that's good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The world belongs to the
storytellers. Yeah, exactly. The world belongs to the storytellers. That's wonderful. Thank you very much. It works really well. Saturn, our principles, our work, in which we can also, our vows that we might have made, and maybe we want to change those. Vows simply are a working definition of reality and how we thought we had to be to survive. And we inherit those from the ancestors and the father's lineage, which is also contained in Saturn. Good. Jupiter. So Saturn is focused, Jupiter expansion. So even just the segue, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. And one of the things I've been working with myself and others that I really like and keep working with it is changing the phrase got to get to, right? So got to is outsourced Saturn. I got to do this homework. I got to do this thing. You know, it's already there's resistance, right? Because it's an outer authority. Get to, what a fabulous opportunity, you know? And, you know, even I've got to get better. I've got to heal. I get to heal. You know, I've got to write this book. I get to write this book. I've got to teach this shift course. I get to teach this shift course. You know, you can feel it right away, right? And so I like the little chants, got to, get to, right? And so we go to Jupiter, which is so important, again, storycraft, stagecraft. Jupiter is the intelligence of curiosity. You know, and very often in medieval astrology, it's called the guardian angel, you know, when it's a very strong Jupiter in somebody's chart. But we can wheel and deal. We can strengthen a Jupiter in somebody's chart, even if somebody has a kind of bummer assignment. But I love that. It's the guardian angel that if we get too Saturn, meaning the difficult side of Saturn, depressed, bleak, you know, Jupiter is the part of us that comes up behind us, gently puts its arms around our shoulders and goes, time to go home for a cup of tea now. you know, Caroline, Stephen, fill in your name, you know, all right, it breaks the trance of just murder. It's also, I think, a great way to think about our guardian angel, because Jupiter's a part of us. I mean, it's got its shadow, which is the gorge theory of pleasure. If this is good, more money. Okay. I mean, everything's got its shadow. But it's the part of us that meets everything with curiosity. Again, other parts of us, not necessarily. But Jupiter, even like, God, I feel like hell. Jupiter goes, how interesting. You know, boy, the world is a mess. How interesting, says Jupiter. So it's you know, I wonder if I could feel worse and get out of bed. How interesting, right? So Jupiter is pretty plucky, buoyant, jaunty, jovial, which comes from Jupiter, right? All these kind of qualities. And again, as we speak them and feed them, we feed this part of us as well, you know, and we don't want to go overboard, you know, manic depressive kind of, you know, inflation thing, you know, so we honor all of those things as well. And then Jupiter leads us to, you've got the list there we go.
Oh, next up is Mars. You know, we're not going to have time to go into each one as much, but we've got a similar journey with Mars, which is known as the power of fierce compassion, Venus, the redemptive power of beauty, Mercury, the magician, the moon, the power of memory to create the future, the sun, the confluence of valleys. I mean, basically each planet is a constellation of a part of ourselves and our soul potential. And so it's like you're bringing that forward and helping that to flower by diving into each of them as a lens on the hologram of the universe.
Thank you for echoing my words back to me. They sound good. They sound good. I like also another way that the eclipse is referred to, you know, now and into the future for its long resonance. It's called the door of heaven opening. I love that. So the door of heaven opens, and you know, and with Mars, our detective selves. I want to, you know, Mars, ruler of Aries and Scorpio. Just last little bit of honoring Mars here, and you've done a great job of the thank you, reminding me of everything. So Mars in the underworld, getting ready to be born. What is it we desire? That's really, you know, lovely. And again, the initiated Mars, the positive creative expression, and to cultivate that in ourselves. So this powerful eclipse also for all of us to go, what do we desire? What do we desire? And that's part of how we also will, you know, honor Mars, because that's the most important question we can all ask ourselves. It's the rudder that, you know, steers the boat. But yeah.
Great. Well, I'll share a little bit more about the program since we have just a few minutes left. So not only do you get the 7 weeks with Caroline, which includes the, you know, dynamic Q&A, you're going to bring different charts into to really analyze and make it personal. So she creates an incredible community, very playful and liberating. And we have a Facebook community. You get everything, all the recordings, every session, and you get word-for-word transcripts, which is definitely a workout for our transcribers, given how Caroline talks. But it's well worth the end result because of the playfulness and magic with the language as well. And we also have a number of other great bonuses. The program is going to start on September 12th on Tuesdays at 5 Pacific time. So really good to sign up right away, and we'll share it. There's a special bonus for doing so. But some of the extra bonuses, first of all, we have one with Caroline and Don Oscar Miro Quesada, Peruvian shaman. This is the trickster and shaman in dialogue. It's interesting, we did a launch with Oscar this week, and he was born on the eclipse. So it's actually his birthday on Monday, so there's some interesting cosmic weaving together there that we didn't even realize in advance of setting this up. We have another bonus on the page you can see at visionaryastrologycourse.com, visionaryastrologycourse.com. It's called Making the Gods Work for You. This is the audiobook of the original namesake of today's program. Very, very well-known book and very well-loved by many. And so this is the audiobook. You get in Caroline's own words. You also have an audio collection from the Visionary Activist Radio Show Archives, True Wonder Women, Crossing Borders to the Middle East. So Caroline is a great radio host, and you want to share a little bit about some of the folks you're going to feature in there?
I do, but I also was pulling up because Don Oscar and I are just meeting, right? And Wolf Wolf want to play, and I sent him some text, and he can I just read the description for the fun of it?
Sure.
Do we have time? Anyway, so this is, you know, he took it and played with it, you know, So here's what Don Oscar and I say in Pahooting, and this is our first form of meeting. Trickster and shaman in dialogue, take a courageously comedic plunge through the rabbit hole and receive a beneficently humbling shamanic dose of oxymoron, moronic ontology, perspicacious paradox, and anomalous affirmation guaranteed to reverse your unreality. That's him. And I go, I can play with this guy.
He's your soul brother. He's your soul brother.
Well, and my soul brother, my actual soul brother, is born August 21st. My real brother, who is my soul.
No kidding. Oh,
yeah, so that's fun too. So journey with Caroline Casey and Don Oscar Romero Quesada as they track the magic of language to its primordial liberating spark before snookered, bamboozled, hoodwinked, conditioned, and colonized. Those are all my languages, to offer ourselves as agents of nature's eloquence. You know, and goes on and on. Eloquence, and then my last sentence, and then his, you know, may our rogue species cultivate reverent curiosity, whereby to rejoin the conversing already underway. And he adds, we trust the provocatively polyamorous, shape-shifting, semiotic bliss emergent from this meta-linguistic skill session with Caroline and Don Oscar shall further, and then my language, to avert further disaster against the stars. So let's gather to consider. Anyway, it looks rousing.
Wow, that is more than rousing. That's epic. So I'll share about a few other bonuses you also get with this program. Since we're running low on time, we actually get, there's the astrological reading raffle, which 14 lucky participants get to have a mini reading as part of the program. And we also have the special bonuses I mentioned for today only. This is our special gift when you sign up today. Good to go to visionaryastrologycourse.com. Again, visionaryastrologycourse.com. And what you get is actually two audio dialogues with Caroline Casey and Rick Tarnas, who is coming from a different angle. He's more academic. He's a little more serious. He's got a little more probably Saturn in his chart. But also, he's got an extraordinary mind. And so this is quite a meeting of unique astrological geniuses here.
And I do have to quip, you know, Rick and I have known each other a long time. He's brilliant and really dedicated. And his book, Cosmos and Psyche, is an invaluable contribution. And then to me, it's like it's written by 8,000 Germans. So in the radio shows that we did when the book came out, but they're still really, really pertinent, I'm pretty sure I tease him in a good way into vernacular accessibility. Uh-huh. So much of the beauty of his dedication then becomes, you know, easily available. So that's my pitch in there.
That is fantastic. That's a huge bonus. So that's your special bonus when you sign up today at visionaryastrologycourse.com. Again, the program starts on September 12th. It's going to be really relevant for our times. It helps you navigate all of these ups and downs with a lot more playfulness in the collective, and also empower yourself to live the fuller palette of astrological, you know, colors within you. And so, again, you can find all the details at visionaryastrologycourse.com. We've kept it very accessible, just three payments of $109, or you save about 10% when you pay in full with $297. And a lot of great bonuses and an amazing adventure. It's going to be quite a romp, councils, there's just so much magic that gets brought into it. So I know you're in for a real treat if you choose to join, Caroline. And Caroline, you want to share in your own words just an invitation to those considering the romp with you through the
we all, regardless, you know, yes, come join if your autonomy so hums, right? And we are all moving. Let us all move our emotional default setting to woof woof, want to play, right? And if somebody doesn't, that's fine. You know, we take no umbrage. But woof woof, want to play is like woof. Yes, we do. And that's also just a way of, lining up with that liberating quality in the world. So definitely, oh team, oh great teammates of the age, you know, woof, woof, want to play. Woof.
Wow. Well, this today has been like CPR for the soul, just boom, you know, bringing us back to life. I'm really grateful personally, and I know everybody who's been participating has really felt the blessing of your sharing today, Caroline. So thank you for being so willing to play cosmically and on the human incarnational level as well, and help us bring a little more magic into this world. So thank you, Caroline. Thank you all for joining, and you're warmly welcome to join the Visionary Activist Astrology Program at visionaryastrologycourse.com.
Nothing can stop us now.
Nothing can. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.